Martin, thanks so much for coming by WFMU today and favoring us with a set of your music.
It's my pleasure once again. I mean, last time was the full band, but this is great fun.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that first of all, just because it seems to me a little unusual for you to play solo, but I know in recent years you've been doing that more often, and I'm wondering if it's something that you decided was okay for you to do, or that you decided that you wanted to do, or if it's just something that happened through circumstances and you decided, oh, this isn't so bad. How did that develop, the playing by yourself?
I used to be really nervous about playing solo. Wasn't very good at it. I'm starting to get better at it now, which is a bit of a relief. And there's just been more opportunities where it's appropriate for me to not have to get the whole band together. So that's one side. And also that I do generally play songs that the band doesn't play as well. So it's a chance to kind of just do something a bit different each time I do a solo show.
Oh, so you can kind of explore your catalog a little bit, things that you know how to play and that you remember how to play that the band hasn't learned yet.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And also, if we have in mind, or if I've thought about a song that would be good to bring out of the past into the band set, it gives me a chance to kind of practice it first and see how it goes down with the audience these days. Because that's the thing. I mean, some of the old songs are so old now, I used to kind of cringe about them. And now I just recognize them for being good, enjoyable songs. And it's quite neat to, I guess, just approach them with a completely different point of view.
Yeah, that's actually one of the questions I had. Your music career has been so long at this point that I'm sure you're definitely in a different place now than you were as a young man writing those first songs. So I'm wondering how you approach them, how you invest yourself in them now that they are so far away from you. Can you still reclaim that kernel of inspiration that you had when you wrote them?
Some of them, like Kaleidoscope World that I did today, is a good example, because initially, you know, I was doing some fairly trite, enjoyable psychedelic pop back in the early years, and then there's quite a long period that it just didn't seem appropriate to, you know, we were doing more serious music, and now, especially with the older fans asking for these songs, I suddenly thought, well, you know, it's not going to hurt me to play them, and it suddenly turns out to be quite enjoyable just to. And it's weird getting glimpses back into a person which is so different from me now that I can look at these songs and think, I would not actually think of constructing a song like that anymore, you know. And sometimes, usually that's for the better, you know. I think, good on you, young Martin, for doing something I would not actually have the courage to do anymore. And because through sheer ignorance, I sort of chose my own path of songwriting.
And I'm sure that's evolved over the years for you, no?
It has. I still don't know sort of formal, sort of song keys and song structures and so on. But now I'm not so scared of learning new information that it's not going to taint my purest vision. And it seems that every time I do learn a bit of technique or a new skill, all it does is obviously broaden my palette in terms of what I can do with songwriting, which is what people told me all along, and I just didn't believe them. But in a weird way, I think I did it right to kind of hold off and just add little bits of, every time I felt stalled as a songwriter, I'd learn a wee bit more and off it would go again.
No, I think that's wonderful. Actually, it's funny that you should mention not knowing the specifics of musical notation and so forth, and yet your songs are so structurally interesting in places. They go places you don't always expect them to go, melodically, structurally, and it seems like a skill you may have learned over the years, although it was there back in the beginning too. So I wonder if it's just something that's natural or instinctual with you.
I think it is fairly natural that I like the surprises. I mean, there's some basic rules I have almost, like if you find yourself repeating a riff four times before you go back into the verse, then usually you'll find that three times is enough. You know? and the fourth is just, you know, and most people stick to groups of four, and that's one of the wee things you'll notice if you start looking in the chills is three and then back into it, you know. But also, at the time I first started writing songs, I was also listening to Syd Barrett and Brian Wilson in particular a lot, and subsequently discovered his style of writing was called modular, you know, which appealed to me, the idea that you just construct these very different bits of music and suddenly think thematically they actually work together. You know, they conjure a similar atmosphere. They've got nothing to do with each other musically, so you have to find a little way of linking them. And that's very much how I approach a lot of early songs. And that's where the weird stuff happens, you know. It because I didn't know I was breaking rules or doing odd things, and I'd just work at it until it sounded right. I just always assumed I couldn't play other people's songs. I'd listen to them on record and think, wow, that sounds really complicated. I didn't realise you could actually just buy sheet music and learn the rough chords and then sort of pick out the wee things in between. So we still have done very few covers, probably, you know, around a dozen covers over the entire Chills history.
That's really astonishing, actually, that few.
Yeah. We actually made a list the other day of for the wall of our practice room, just to kind of get to grips of where we were. And what we currently know as a band, it was something like 75 songs, Chill songs, and about another 12 or so covers, I think. Then I went back through old tapes in terms of what previous Chills had played, and there's like another 70 songs or something.
Wow.
So but still, you know, I don't consider that an awful lot, not for a career of over 35 years, you know. Some bands have literally thousands of songs that they can just pluck out of their little notebook.
I'd be curious what some of the cover tunes you have on your list were.
The very first cover we ever did was Endless Sleep, the Jody Reynolds sort of death song. although it was based on, the first version I heard was Marty Wilde and his Wildcats, the British rock and roller, actually father of Kim Wilde.
Famous for Kids in America.
That's right. And apparently a Chills fan too.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
I wonder what she's up to these days.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else? We played Matthew and Son by Cat Stevens
for
some time.
Oh, I love that song, yeah.
And we were encouraged to record it in the 80s. I just knew that would be death. We'd be we would have had a hit with it, and that would have been it, you know.
Yeah.
They're the band who do, you just never release
the cover
version.
They would be the Cat Stevens band from New Zealand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Never release the cover version or the novelty song for Thou Shall Be Stuck With It forever.
Did your record company ever try to convince you to do just that?
Not with that one, no.
Okay.
So that was good. Recently, I've been doing Mad World, based on the Gary Jules version, and that was nice. I don't know. We did a couple of Kink songs not long ago, Dead End Street and Animal Farm.
Well, these are all great choices. I can hear the Chills doing all of these songs.
Yeah, I guess most of them are pretty obvious.
I would love to hear the string section with the Chills on something like Matthew N's song.
Yeah, well, finally that came out on the live album, Somewhere Beautiful, which
yes.
Came out... I don't know, 3 years ago now or something.
Yeah, I think 2014 or 15, somewhere around there. Yeah.
So,
which is a perfect encapsulation of a part of your career, I think, that live album is just beautifully recorded and contains so many wonderful songs, including Wet Blanket, which you played today, and also Pink Frost.
It's an interesting live album in that some of it actually is live. I'll tell you what happened. We played at a 50th birthday party, the guy, and it was a New Year's Eve party as well, combined. We recorded the gig just because we just tend to do that sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy next morning, we were talking to this guy, turns out to be an American millionaire art dealer who subsequently started the label Far South Records to record the Chills. And that became involved with Fire Records. So that's how we've ended up with Fire Records. But he said, let's release last night's performance, and of course we hadn't been sort of thinking release at all. It was just kind of documentation. My effects pedal had failed, the guitar amp had failed, the bass amp had fallen over, one of the three keyboards had gone down.
Murphy's Law.
Yeah, one of the backing vocal mics just crapped out. So we replaced all that stuff in the studio, and I just thought, no, I'm not letting the one at last live Chills album going out. So we essentially did in the studio, there were rules about, you know, not making this fancy. It's got to be pretty, just play along and do what you did. And
right.
And I think, so we actually ended up with a pretty accurate version of how we were then, but the band has improved so much since then.
Well, you guys have been out on the road since then a lot more and playing the songs.
Yeah, and it was quite intermittent what we were doing back then, and really there was no focus because there was no sort of heading towards an album or anything,
right?
Let alone the bigger shows we just ended up doing through Europe and here last year or whenever it was.
Yeah, last year.
Just obviously the more you play, the better you get, but also, you know, if you've got a real reason to really spend extra time tightening up and really listen to what each other's doing rather than just kind of punking out the songs as we kind of were, And that, so it's been, you know, it's a good document to have. I still hope that we can do what I've always imagined, which is go down to, say, Scott Base in the Antarctic and do the chills live at the South Pole. We actually got as far as looking to the flights and everything. And
is that right?
It's possible. The trouble is if you go down, you've got to stay for 2 weeks. So
why so long?
Because there's only in and out flights for the science bases.
I see.
So we'd have to stay in one of the science bases.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah, it could be good.
Yeah,
that's something would happen like the movie The Thing, you know. That, that's what I'm hoping. And you know, we could do like a Christmas show and a New Year's show, just a few shows, and put together a best of. But somewhere down the line, anyway, we'll do that.
Are you playing any new songs? Are you writing any new songs towards a future release?
Yeah, well, we've been doing two in the set. One of them was the one Easy Peasy, mm-hmm. Which we've actually recorded as a single, but the song has advanced so much since then that we'll probably do it again for the next album.
Great.
There's another new one that we've been playing a bit. I'm finding that the simple songs are taking a lot longer than they used to, because on one hand, once you've been down a certain road musically, you can't repeat yourself, and so you have to look at other ways of trying to keep things simple, which is actually very difficult. So I find the more complicated songs, I can just write them. That's what I wanted. But the song Easy Peasy, I've been writing it for 2.5 years, and I think, and we've been performing it for that long,
sure,
as well. And
sure.
I think only now is it, you know, pretty much getting ready to record. So, and I'm in the process of putting together a new home recording setup, just a pretty simple one, probably using a later version of GarageBand,
mm-hmm.
And then we'll start the serious writing for the next album, which we hope to start recording later this year and have out, I don't know, sort of early mid next year.
Oh, that's very good news.
Yeah, and that's a longer gap than we actually hoped, because we really, now that things are moving for the band so well, we want to be much more productive, you know, so an album every, say, 2.5 years, I think would be,
Yeah.
That would be ideal.
So it seems like the current version of the band is definitely gelled, and you're going to move forward with them.
Yeah, well, Todd on drums and James on bass have been with me since 1999, so
been a while.
That's a long while. Yeah. And Erica on violin, keyboards, guitar, and vocals has been, I always forget, it's about 17 years now, I think. 16 or 17. And Ollie on other keyboards, and is 10 or 11 years. So this is, you know, even since Ollie joined, it's the most stable chills that's ever been. And in its entirety, it's now over half the band's history. So, you know, so we can put to rest those stories of the the chills, Martin's revolving door policy of band membership. Yeah. You know, every time we go on tour, it's like, so who have you got in the band this time? Oh, I will kill you. It is the same people I've been playing for 20 years.
Yeah, for some reason, I mean, very early on of sort, the band sort of got that reputation as being a revolving door type of band.
Yeah,
yeah. But I think you've put that well behind.
And we're playing so well together, and there's a real commitment. I mean, it's sort of hard to explain, but it's much more difficult to make that kind of life choice about being in a band in New Zealand, because obviously with the state of the industry, it's tough all over. But people are saying, well, just go on the road, sell merchandise, you know, keep playing. That's fine. But if you come from the Southern Hemisphere, you're adding another $20,000 of airfares on the top of that before you even start touring. So
that's
serious decisions.
That's serious money.
We have to, you know, the band have got families and kids and other jobs, and that all has to be taken into account into the tour budget. So
of course.
So it's not like being sort of 17 or 26 again, when you can kind of just sort of drop your job and hope to get another one when you get back. It's and the fact that these people have stuck with me all this time, and musically there's you know, there's intuition going on there now, which is extraordinary. So it's great.
Oh, that's terrific. Have you I mean, obviously the music industry has changed a lot since you first entered the music industry. Do you think overall the developments have been for the better? Or things have gotten just much harder for the performing musician and the recording musician?
Well, obviously the digital side of it and the ease of downloading has made it almost impossible to make a living, as you know, from the songwriting point of view. which leaves performance.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. But, you know, I'm turning 54 this year, and it would be impossible for me to go out and tour as much as we need to generate that income unless we're able to sort of move up onto a next level of kind of, you know, regular festivals and that sort of thing. So, you know, some serious decisions have to be made. My biggest concern is, while on one hand you've got a proliferation of music everywhere and a lot of rubbish, but also some really amazing stuff being made and sort of cross-cultural combinations you would not have envisaged before. At the same time, a lot of smart people will be looking at music as an option and just saying, no, I'm not going to do that. So I think we're actually in a period of, you know, not knowing quite what we're losing in terms of, you know, I've noticed the younger generations would be a much more focused group of people and much more aware of, you know, than my post-punk generation was. Very lighthearted about sort of living on the unemployment benefit in New Zealand was actually quite easy. And a lot of great bands exist because of that, you know. So it became almost the sort of government art subsidy that was not kind of mentioned. And really, you know, right up to high levels, that was kind of the understanding. And of course, that's changed now.
Sure,
so,
sure.
But, you know, it's very hard, if not impossible, for most people to actually seriously commit to a band and be holding down a day job as well. So, you know, we'll see what happens. It's exciting times. And I'm really enjoying actually being out and learning again about what production values are expected, what people are doing, the extraordinary technology that I've kind of turned my back on because, one, I couldn't afford it, two, it was scary. and I just sort of thought, no, I'll be purist and stick to my equipment. And now I'm finding the sheer joy of just all these new toys. It's great.
Right. And did I hear correctly, you are working on the home studio and recording at home?
Yeah, well, it's what I used to do, even back.
Going a long way back.
Way back. I just had a four-track cassette thing, an old Tascam.
But now with the technology at the level it's at, you can make professional studio recordings at home.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I bought two or three other systems that just never quite worked out and have been aiming at Pro Tools because that's the one I'm most familiar with, just not actually hands-on, but certainly over people's shoulders for like 25 years now, just actually knowing what they're capable of doing. So I was pleased to hear that GarageBand is not a big process to actually convert those files. You know, so if I do actually come up with that one take of a guitar at a home demo that I want to take onto the actual album,
you can save it.
I can do it.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Apart from that, it seems to be quite an extraordinary program. I'm starting to unlock the doors in my mind where these songs have been banging away, trying to get out for a long time, and That's gonna be the most exciting thing. Just it's a weird thing to try and explain to people, but having songs that are trying to grow in your mind and there's really no way of capturing them apart from recently it's just been on my iPhone, you know, just catching a vague riff, and it just kind of ultimately after 10, 15 years of that, it's very disheartening. It's just guitar riff 326, you know. So you kind of lose heart in it, you know, and the belief you have in that song on that day is gone. You have to relearn it. You have to try and think what you were, you know, imagined for the rest of the song back then. So having something as supposedly simple as GarageBand where you can just go in, bang it down, and work on it, you know, on the spot. I'm getting all tinkly.
The creative juices are bubbling.
Yeah, they really are.
That's good news. I think a lot of people have noted, and I certainly have noted that recently, your songs, at least thematically, have seemed to have broadened in scope a little bit. I used to feel the chills were. A lot of the chill songs were very personal songs about relationships and things like that, and some of them still are. But I noticed there's also this attention to the world outside, that seems to be a growing interest in at least in the lyrics. Is that something you have been thinking about, or something that's affected you as you've grown older? Or
certainly, when it came time to record the Silver Bullets album, which was nearly 2 years ago now. part of what we're talking about, that there being so much music out there, I didn't want to put out anything that was just pointless. And it seemed, with so much really important stuff going on in the world, if I, as a songwriter, couldn't find a way of commenting on that that was not cliched, you know, that was my personal challenge. Was it's an easy trap to try and write sort of protest songs or message songs, and most of them date really badly. So that was the kind of call for some of the album. But also, having talked about this a bit recently, I've looked back through the Chills catalogue, and there's songs like Brave Words. There's songs about domestic violence, Sanctuary and the Male Monster from the Id, and what else? I had a whole list of songs that I sort of made up for somebody the other day about various environmental things and so on. So it's not new, but to try and do it more from an adult point of view, I guess, was part of the challenge. And the relationship thing, it just seemed more of a young person's game. Plus, I haven't actually been in a really long-term relationship for some time. And the other song, Easy Peasy, the new one, started as a kind of a broken up song. But it was kind of like, I've been there before, and Easy Peasy started to evolve, and now is actually more about New Zealand's really bad high rate of youth suicide. It's got, I think, the highest rate in the kind of like, what do they call it, the OED, what is it called?
I'm not sure, yeah. Giving Japan a run for their money, I guess, yeah.
Yeah, and it's mostly young people. It's across the board, and the government's trying to ignore it, and shutting down funding for the agencies are front line.
Of course,
with this.
Yeah.
Just the same thing that's happening everywhere. But So Easy Peasy has become a song about how, for people in that situation, it's not easy either making the decision to die or to stay alive. You know, that it's a very personal thing. And, you know, I've had, as I said to somebody, most of the people I know who've died have been suicides, and that's quite a lot now. So, and also dealing with depression myself, it's never been something I've seriously considered, but I certainly know the pathway that takes you there and how it's, you know, it's so different from just feeling blue and having a bad day. It's like this, the blackness that is so overwhelming that all you can think of is making that stop. You know, it's not like just sort of, oh, here we go, you know, another feeling a bit down today. It's, and trying to explain that to people who's, oh God, everyone gets the blues, you know, these people whinging on. And so I don't know, it's a huge issue and it's a tricky one to take on in a song, but I think, yeah, Easy Peasy, it's starting to get there.
So, yeah, I think so, but you haven't really flinched away from addressing serious issues like depression and death. I mean, certainly Pink Frost is a pretty gut-wrenching song.
Yeah, although that's very fictional.
It has the ring, but it affects on a very deep level when you hear the song.
Yeah, I think in the case of Pink Frost, it was that the music came first, and that was the atmosphere that it threw off to me personally as well. I mean, it hit me, so I thought, you know, there's got to be a story that goes with this that justifies that atmosphere. I wouldn't say intense atmosphere. It is kind of it's an atmosphere you can soak in, really. So And it's still, I think the Chills have only even not played it twice in live sets since it was written, because it's just constantly evolving. And being part of that atmosphere on stage each night is still rewarding. It's never boring, so it's good.
And I have to say, hearing it performed by you solo certainly gave it a different dimension for me, another dimension, a more intimate feeling, a more personal feeling.
Yeah, well, it's one of the ones that I just assumed I could not do without the band, and then actually sat down and tried it and realized that, you know, with a couple of little adjustments, just the core of the thing came through. I mean, that's how it was written as well. I had the bulk of the song written in one night. It was one of those real flood of inspiration. You know, the aliens had obviously picked on me to beam down the song. So, yeah.
Is a song like Entertainer an accurate reflection of how you feel about your experience in the music business?
No, it's probably the most dishonest song I've ever written. What entertainment is really about is when you're young and feeling sorry for yourself, but you've got access to dad's car and nobody else does. So you end up, and you're not in a relationship, but you end up driving around couples all the time. So Mr. Three, you see, and Mr. Five.
Mr. Five and Mr. Nine. Yeah.
Mr. Nine. I never had the van, but you know, if I had, I would have ended up with four couples and me. So it's sort of... But, you know, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek because there's a genuinely dark thing happening in that song. And I think of it kind of like a David Lynch kind of set when I'm singing it, because there's something creepy going on which is not connected to the words. But
right.
And it does have that kind of sad, crazed clown kind of thing happening as well.
It does, yeah. It reflects back to also that film years ago, the Olivier film. And it just put me in mind of also, I don't know if you're familiar with Loudon Wainwright, he did a song called The Back Nine about being a performing artist who always has to perform for people and be that person out there, to be the person driving the cab, taking the people where they need to go. And right. I'm wondering if that's something you feel conflicted about.
What, the demands of actual
The demands of actual performance, yeah.
I'm certainly more comfortable with it now than I was when I was younger. I wasn't quite sure what to do. I knew that I was not a naturally charismatic person. And growing up in a city with both Chris Knox and Shane Carter is just pretty full-on live personalities. You know, the bar was set high, and I assumed that's kind of what the rest of the world was like. And it turns out, no, there aren't many people like Chris Knox in particular. So,
how is he feeling, by the way?
In terms of recovery from his stroke, mm-hmm. he's getting some words back. He's doing some absolutely amazing painting. So, you know, it's typical Chris that, you know, can't make much music anymore. Although he's continued with his band, The Nothing, for a while, and was getting up and sort of half screaming, but also doing words. He seems to be one of those people that if he's singing, he can get more words out than he can through actually talking. So he's actually doing really well. I've heard a number of times that he's essentially plateaued in terms of, you know, from a brain scan, those big black holes are not going anywhere.
Sure.
But then he'll start painting again, and it's like, really, you know, if anybody is going to just keep surprising us, it's going to be Chris. Mm.
I don't want to make too much of it, but there was that article, I think, was it in The Guardian, that was reflecting on your own health issues fairly recently. Is that something you'd care to talk about at all, or?
Well. Yeah, because it's actually sort of, it's good news at the moment. I was selected to do the Harvoni treatment for my hepatitis C, Harvoni combined with ribavirin, a 12-week treatment, whereas I'd done interferon back in 2000 for 12 months, and that was a bit of a nightmare and never quite worked. But I finished Harvoni at Easter time. So far, the results look like it's actually beaten the hepatitis C virus, but I won't know for sure for a few more months. But they do have an incredible success rate, like sort of, you know, 96-97% or something. So I'm already feeling more energized, feeling healthier. I stopped drinking 7 months ago yesterday.
Congratulations.
I am going to be one of these annoying people who tell people, yes.
No, it's not annoying. It's important.
But it's made me feel a lot better, and my voice, you know, you wouldn't tell from it now, that's the plane's fault. has been stronger for it. Mm-hmm. It's certainly been sort of increases in energy level and then big drops at the moment, just because I've got to be careful of how to use this energy.
Sure.
But long term, it means having been told last year that I had maybe 6 to 12 months to live, then it's now turned into any number of years.
It was striking to read that diagnosis and then realize that things are looking so much more positive. That last year's tour was not the farewell tour, which is a frightening thought. Actually, I could tell the audience that Martin actually does look extremely healthy. He's sitting across from me and he looks great.
Still got a wee bit of weight to lose, but it's coming. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you think it's scary reading that, you should wait till you're told it with a documentary camera pointing in your face at the same time.
There was a documentary camera there?
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Does that mean someone's doing a documentary about you?
Well, actually, yeah, finally, there's actually a really good one being made, which was... It's now turned into like a full-length feature documentary. So really, if it hadn't been for the fact that I had these health issues, there wouldn't have been the hook necessary to get the funding.
I see.
Because everyone was sick of funding just another rock band documentary. So that's quite ironic. But it's been done. It's been done really well from what I've seen. And there's a chance it may actually take a wee bit longer because everyone involved is now aware that what they thought was going to happen in the story, which I even saw the proposal had two different endings. There was the good ending and there was the other one.
Oh, Lord.
And now they're realising, in fact, what's happening in front of their eyes is, you know, with my energy, the way the band's playing, heading into the new album was actually going to be stuff well worth covering. So it may be delayed a little bit for the completion, but it's meant getting all the archives together finally. And we've been, actually the Chills have been really good at that with Scott, my manager, and I've put a lot of work into it. So we've also got a friend in Dunedin, Andy Ellis, who conveniently runs a business called Converted, which converts pretty much any format in film, audio and visual into digital. And he's got probably the biggest Flying Nun archive and certainly the biggest Chills archive. So we now have literally hundreds of gigs and radio shows and, you know, whatever
archived.
And that's just a start because now we're going to match up all the photos from the gigs, the posters, the set lists, and just continue expanding on this whole thing. And old family home movies from when I was like a toddler. And so yeah, it's been a good chance, a good opportunity to kind of focus on that and try and get everything together, or at least track down where things are.
Yeah.
One of the most exciting finds personally was when we recorded Soft Bomb in Los Angeles, actually at the Capitol Building Studios in 92.
The tower? The
Yeah, the Capitol yeah, Tower, yeah. Here, which obviously is kind of daunting. The only thing that got recorded there was Van Dyke Parks doing the string arrangement for the song Water Wolves.
Mm-hmm.
And again, there was actually a documentary crew following us around at that time, but they'd gone off to New York, I think, to interview Anne Rice at that point, and actually missed that.
But oh, no.
Luckily, there was somebody there who'd been part of that team who bought their own video camera, and so I knew somebody had actually taken some footage. And long story short, we've managed to track down who that was. He decided to finally look through this garage full of tapes and has found the footage of Van Dyke Parks and the string section. So,
oh, marvelous.
Yeah, so it's good. So the little gems coming out there. They won't all make the movie, but we're hoping if it does actually come out as a DVD, there'll be a lot of...
Yeah, loaded up with extras. Yeah.
Loaded extras.
Yeah. So, yeah, oh, that's brilliant. Oh, that's such good news. You're in New York this week. This will be broadcast after you're already gone, unfortunately, but you're in New York this week for various activities. But can you think offhand of anything you have coming up for this? This radio station broadcasts across the world, so if you're playing in Europe, you're playing in New Zealand, you're playing anywhere, we'll be able to... let people know about that. And I don't want to put you on the spot. If you can't think of anything offhand, we can certainly post it to the online playlist later. But will you be doing any upcoming gigs?
We're going back to do a couple of gigs in New Zealand soon. And an interesting one is we're playing with The Wedding Present, the British band.
Oh, wonderful.
We played with them, I think it was like 1986, and then 1995, we've already played with them twice, and it was on exactly the same day of the year, both times.
Interesting.
Unfortunately, it's not this time. But so that'll be good.
That's, yeah, Gedge is one of my favourites.
Yeah. I went to the festival they run, is it Brighton by the Sea, or whatever, and saw Cinerama as well, his other band.
Sure.
And apart from that, just we've done a New Zealand tour recently and kind of delayed the Dunedin show to late July, 28th, sort of homecoming there. And then after that, there's a bit of a gap until basically we're back here, I think. So,
oh, so you'll be coming back next year to the States or later this year?
Yeah, it was going to be later this year. It looks like it might, for reasons to do with visas and the documentary and everything,
sure,
that it might be earlier next year. Which will actually probably be better because we will have been in the studio working on new material as well, and it'll be a good chance to probably road check some of that before we finally complete it.
So, terrific.
As well as all your favourite hits from the past.
A few of the new songs, but also your favourite hits.
People don't go out to see new stuff.
Well, we get so excited when we hear a favourite song.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so. I totally understand that. And one thing I can't stand these snobbish bands who refuse to play the big hit. You know, it's kind of like, oh, come on. Some of these people have been waiting 20 years to hear that, you know.
So I know.
And the trouble is, with the Chills, I mean, it's good not being a one-hit wonder band, but it means we've also actually got an entire set's worth of kind of key songs now that we could just play just those songs. And
you literally could do a greatest hit show. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, Kaleidoscope World, Rolling Moon, Doldrums, Pink Frost, Leather Jacket, I love
Night of Chill Blue,
Oncoming Day. Yeah, well, I wouldn't even put that one in there.
Oh, I would.
I'm sort of more things that have been singles and stuff.
Oh, so sure.
Wet Blanket, Come Home, Male Monster from the Earth. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's nearly a set already. Molten Gold,
yeah.
And that did well.
Wonderful single.
There's a new one, Rocket Science, which came out for Record Store Day, and we've been playing that, and it's turned into a really good live favourite.
Nice.
So it's good.
Good.
So anyway, no, we always make sure there's a really good selection of old Chill songs, and the fans who are coming out hoping we're not going to do too much new stuff are coming back and saying, actually, I really like that. Is that on the new album? Your new stuff sits so well alongside your old stuff. So that's the general response, and it's good.
That's good. That means the band is still hitting, which is great.
Yeah.
Good news. So we have a lot to look forward to. That's great. A new documentary being worked on, a new Chills album being worked on, and an upcoming tour. So very excited for that, Martin.
Yeah, it's good times. I think things are moving very fast. I would not have pictured this, say, 4 years ago, you know, that it really looked like if I was going to get another album done at all, that was it. It was going to be lucky.
And all of a sudden,
it's great to come back out and find that the interest in the Chills has been just constantly bubbling away and growing.
Mm.
And there's a new generation of people who come up and say that their parents or some, you know, played it to them, or one of the newer, younger bands are referencing us, and so they made the connection. And they're not going away disappointed either. It's good. So
oh, sure. And when the older stuff gets reissued, you know, with bonus tracks and things like that, that's also a great thing. People rediscover it. So.
Yeah. And on that note, there are discussions in place. I know there are certain Chills albums which have not been available, and it is a crime.
Mm.
And there are very favorable discussions underway across a number of labels at this point.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Great. Well, Martin, thank you so much for coming by today to talk to us as well as play your music for us.
Thank you. It's always a thrill to come to here. It's great. Nice vibe.
Thanks, Martin.